Sundays are for recharging, and we've got the prescription, a full hour devoted to your health. From headlines in medicine to everyday fitness tips you can use, this is where science meets common sense. Welcome to Health Radio. Now, here's your host, Susie Jones.
And good Sunday morning, and it is 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Sunday morning. A little chilly outside if you're up and about already. It was quite beautiful, though, actually. I had three rarelys on that one, get up early. But yesterday, Josh, I started getting sick. I could feel it in my neck, and in my throat, and in my nose. You might hear it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I went to sleep. I had so much stuff to do yesterday, so many activities that I did not do because I don't feel well.
Yeah.
And that's a good question. When you don't feel well, you should not hang around people. It's best for them and you. So I canceled a lot of things, and I went to sleep because I felt so rotten at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm. I kid you not. So then I got up at 4 in the morning, which makes sense, right, if you're listening?
Yeah.
651-461-9226. That's our talk and text line. And you can be part of the show at any time. Maybe you're sick and you want to share how you feel. Well, I feel rotten, and I'm going to get through this because that's what we do when we're professional broadcasters. We wake up. But I did look outside this morning at 4:30 in the morning. It was beautiful. I walked out there. It's so quiet. The moon was so bright, and there's a bright star right next to it. And I'm sure if Mike Lynch was on, he would tell me what planet it was.
Probably. Yes.
So happy to have you with us today. Happy to have the Mormon Tabernacle Choir back on. Happy to have you listening at 651-461-9226. And there was really a lot happening this week in the world of health. CDC Vaccine Advisory Committee voted to recommend that babies get their first hepatitis B shot at 2 months of age rather than birth.
On Friday, in an 8-3 vote, the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee voted to end a decades-long guidance that recommended that all newborn babies receive a hepatitis B vaccine on the day they're born. The panel now recommends parents wait at least 2 months to immunize babies with a low risk of contracting hepatitis B. The vaccine is still recommended at birth for babies whose mothers test positive for the virus or who weren't tested. Addie Guajardo, CBS News, New York.
And Minnesota doctors weighing in as well to this news Friday.
Dr. Leslie King Schultz is with the Minnesota chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She says the decision is reckless because the vaccine has been proven effective for decades. And without it, more of Minnesota's babies will be at risk of fatal liver disease.
This decision was made without any new scientific data to support it. It feels very politically motivated and not based on any change in the science or the evidence. The issue with hepatitis B is it's very transmissible, and many people who have hepatitis B don't know it.
She says while families still have the choice to give their children the vaccine, she and other medical professionals plan to focus on educating families about its benefits and dispel circulating myths. Taylor Rivera, News Talk 830. WCCO.
And CBS News reporter Christopher Cruz says a new study has found that tests are better than older imaging tests, showing that people who are obese have more indications of the disease than people who aren't.
Researchers examined the biomarkers of more than 1,200 patients. Study senior author Dr. Cyrus Raji is an associate professor of radiology at Washington University in St. Louis.
What we found in the study is that baseline obesity led to a 13 to 19% increase in the Alzheimer's blood biomarkers over a follow-up period of 5 years.
Experts say about half of dementia cases are linked to obesity and diabetes, factors that in many cases are preventable. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
And a warning for young women regarding breast cancer. Here is CBS News correspondent Michael George.
There's an alarming rise in cases of breast cancer among young women. A study presented at a meeting of the Radiological Society of North America found nearly a quarter of all breast cancer cases occurred among women age 18 to 49. Researchers say this is concerning because currently there are no screening guidelines for women under 40.
And with the holidays and all that food that you'll be indulging in this time of year, experts have identified the top Christmas songs designed to exercise. It's kind of fun. Here's Stacey Lynn.
My Body Tutor analyzed the Christmas tunes in the 120 to 150 BPM range. That's considered the sweet spot for moderate to high intensity cardio workouts. And topping the list, Mariah Carey's iconic All I Want for Christmas Is You. Close behind classics like,
I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas,
Jose Feliciano's Feliz Navidad,
Jingle Bells, Jingle Bells,
and Frank Sinatra's Jingle Bells. Stacey Lynn, CBS News.
And WCCO News Time is 7:15.
And welcome back. It is a Sunday morning here on CCO. I'm Susie Jones, and we are so excited to have with us today Andrea Sauer. She is Chief Operating Officer of Livia. And as you know, I've just started the program, and I'm very happy to have her part of the show today just to talk a little bit about what Livia is. We've heard a lot about it. We've seen Jason do the program. But just from her perspective, Andrea, first of all, thanks for coming on.
Happy to be here.
And tell me about it. If you had to explain this to someone in the street who said, what's Livia?
Yeah, well, Livia is an award-winning nutrition program. We've been around for 16 years in the Minnesota and Wisconsin area. We've really evolved over the years as weight loss has evolved, and it's become a program that still offers premier nutritional counseling with dietetics, dietitians, and nutritionists. But now, since 2003, we've also added medical weight loss. So we have a full team of nurse practitioners, registered nurses, and we're offering GLP-1 weight loss medications to accompany our nutrition program, because we feel very strongly that it's really that combination of nutrition and medical together that makes a successful, well-rounded, holistic approach to weight loss in today's world.
I know that there's a lot of talk about what's the best way to lose weight, how do you keep it off, what works for one person maybe doesn't work for another. What I've learned in just the short time is, for me, it's the consistency, it's the writing down, it's being more mindful, and I'm finding success early. So how big of a piece is the behavioral learning that goes on as part of Livia?
I would say the behavioral piece is probably the most important part of all of it. Even if you're doing the medical weight loss, if you haven't mastered the behavioral piece, the headspace, if you will, then likely you'll lose the weight, sure, but more than likely it'll come back. And that's a lot of work to do just to regain that weight again. So we really feel strongly that regardless of which path you're taking, the behavioral counseling, the behavioral modifications is critical to long-term success.
Are you seeing a lot of people signing up and asking questions about the program and the medical side?
Yes, I would say most of the people that are coming in are asking about both. And nutrition will work for almost everyone. Medical works for a lot of people. It's not always the answer. Mastering the two, combining the two, can really be a good solution for our clients. Medical weight loss is a great solution for a lot of people. It can work really well. But at some point, you may want to come off the medication. And with anything, if you don't learn how to maintain the weight, which again is mental, that's headspace. If you haven't learned that, then the weight comes back on. And let's face it, it is an investment. So you're going to invest in this for yourself. So if you're going to do that, learn all of it. Learn the holistic approach so you know how to eat once you come off the medication. And if you aren't doing medication, you're doing nutritional only, you still have to learn how to do this for life.
We also have with us today Tricia Hayden. She is a lead registered nurse with Livia. Well, you just heard our conversation with Andrea about people gaining and losing weight and being afraid to come in if they've made mistakes. How does your job as a registered nurse fit into the big picture of all of this?
Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me. So that's such a great question, because puts me in a really important role to support the clients that are coming in for the medical weight loss, but also having that nutrition background myself has been very valuable for helping the clients stay on track with their nutrition program as all, because it is the big picture making sure that they are eating enough, making sure they're eating adequately, and getting adequate amounts of protein in to help preserve that muscle mass.
Do you find that people, when they lose weight quickly, that muscle mass, maybe if they're doing it on their own, that tends to go first?
Well, the idea is we want to prevent any muscle loss from happening. But when you are losing weight in general, it doesn't matter if you're on the GLP-1 or if you're on any other type of weight loss regimen, the potential to lose muscle is out there. So our goal is to really help our clients maintain their muscle mass, because we know that when they have the adequate muscle, it's going to actually help speed up their metabolism too and help them keep the weight off when they're done with their GLP-1 therapy or they've completed our nutrition program. So we are true believers in making sure that they get that adequate protein in. And we have a wonderful in-body machine here too that we can use.
I was just going to ask you about that.
To help monitor where they are at with their muscle mass.
So if you get measured and your muscle mass and your fat mass is at a certain level, I was told by Molly that you can qualify to get one of the medications based on your fat content. Is that right? Or am I simplifying it too much?
Well, we take several factors in for whether somebody qualifies for the GLP-1 therapy. We're not only looking at their BMI, but we are also looking at the percentage of body fat and waist circumference. So it all plays a factor in whether or not they will qualify for the GLP-1 medication.
Do people come in and sadly you say, you know, you just don't hit the numbers? Or do they like, oh, I want that shot, I don't care what my numbers say? Or do you have some kind of responsibility?
So we want to be medically safe, of course. So yes, we have had to turn down clients. But for the most part, our clients that are coming here, they know they need to lose weight, right? And so we talk to them about our nutrition program. We talk to them about the medical GLP-1 as a wonderful tool to adjunct to their nutrition program. So yes, it does come up once in a while. But for the most part, our clients, you know, they're here because they need to lose weight.
Now, before we let you go, if you had a tip or advice or something you wanted to tell people listening today that's thinking about their weight loss and their struggles, what would you say?
Oh, I would say, you know, it is a really important step to prioritize your health. And so if you're feeling the nudge that you do need some help getting off maybe the weight loss roller coaster ride, we are here for you. This is what we do day in and day out. And I encourage you to take that step and really invest in your health and your, you know, again, your overall wellness, because we're here to support you every step of the way.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Andrea. What great information. I know you can get online and go to Livia.com to find out more information. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the second half of the Health Hour. We do it every week. I'm Susie Jones, Josh Wheeler at the helm. Talked a lot over the months, and actually now years, about Alzheimer's and dementia and different studies that are out there about actually what helps it. There's no cure at this point. I don't know. There's a lot of people doing research. There's been news out a common vaccine meant to ward off shingles might actually be protecting the brain. Earlier this year, researchers reported that the shingles vaccine cut the risk of developing dementia by 20% over a 7-year period. We've invited Hennepin Healthcare Dr. Carrie Sheets to join us on our John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Good morning, Dr. Sheets. Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, good morning, Susie. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I kind of mentioned the study about shingles, but I imagine you do a lot of research. Have you heard of that research, and what do we know about that?
Yeah, I have. You know, I think it's really interesting and speaks to how complex the brain is. And what these researchers showed is that getting the shingles vaccine reduced the risk of dementia, reduced the risk of mild cognitive impairment, so sort of those early memory changes. And then among patients that had dementia, it reduced the risk that they died from the dementia or perhaps sort of slowed down the mortality.
Is it something that's actually being used now in nursing homes and hospitals, et cetera?
Well, giving the Shingrix vaccine or the shingles vaccine to prevent shingles, we're not giving it right now to prevent dementia, although I would encourage anyone who's 50 or older to go get their shingles vaccine. It's really effective at preventing shingles, which is painful and can cause sort of pain long term. And I think this new data just shows us how complex some of these viruses are, and again, how important it is to get vaccinated to prevent the kind of downstream consequences of the virus.
Right. I had it. Carrie, when I was 25, and it was the worst pain I've ever felt. It did not match childbirth, but it was pretty close.
Well, that's what I hear of it. It is just incredibly painful.
Very painful. So get your shingles shot. Tell us about the work you do at Hennepin Healthcare in terms of research.
I wanted to talk about a study we have going on called HAPS, or the Healthy Aging Through the Senior Years Study. We know that dementia is more common in older Black adults than many other older adults. And so we are doing an observational study, so no intervention, just to try to figure out why we see more dementia in older Black adults, especially in Minnesota, with the goal of trying to help our patients prevent dementia or lower their risk of dementia.
And so when you say lower the risk or prevent, what is a person doing to lower their risk or prevent getting dementia or Alzheimer's?
Yeah, what we're looking for in the study is we're focusing on a lot of cardiovascular risk factors, so risk factors for heart disease or the existence of heart disease. For everyone, things like exercising or just walking regularly, eating a healthy diet, staying socially engaged, we know that for all older adults, that can lower your risk of dementia.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did a story earlier about obesity and the links between obesity and Alzheimer's. Is that one of the factors? I know you're mentioning health and wellness.
It is one of the factors. We think it's probably a smaller factor. There is a medical journal, The Lancet, that convenes a group of experts every couple years to look at these modifiable risk factors. And I believe in the most recent study, they showed that obesity was definitely a modifiable risk factor. But some of the obesity-related conditions, like diabetes and high blood pressure, play a bigger role in dementia. So it's a lot about making sure that you see your primary care provider and get screened for diabetes and hypertension and then treat it if it's there.
So right now, if someone's listening and maybe they know someone at church or they're involved in a different organization, who are you looking for this study?
Yeah, we're looking for older Black adults aged 55 years and older. You can have no memory concerns. You can have concerns about your memory. The only kind of memory requirement is that you have to be able to participate in the memory tests. And if you're interested, you can give us a call at 612-283-6746.
Can you say that?
More information about the study.
Can you say that again?
Yeah, 612-283-6746.
And you're asking for African-American men to do this, to be part of this
Men and women, although I will say we've had a little bit more trouble enrolling men, so we are especially looking for men, but both men and women.
So this would be, how old would they have to be?
Have to be 55 or older.
Okay. And are you actively reaching out in the community and going to places to find them and say, hey, you know, how do you reach your study participants?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, we're working with several really experienced, wonderful community engagement partners. We're working with Clarence Jones from the Human Partnership, Bonisha Washington from LINC, and then Robin Frazier from the Center for Healthy Aging at the University of Minnesota. And they're really helping us get out in the community and connect with people that might be interested in enrolling in the study. And they're also helping us share the results and information about dementia prevention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because talk about the seriousness of it. I mean, we are an aging population. We're not going to stop aging. We're going to continue to age. How big of a deal is this to get a handle on?
Yeah, so we know that age is the biggest risk factor for dementia. So just like you said, as we all get older, we're going to see more dementia. I really like to talk about what we can all do to lower our risk, which is, again, staying active, eating healthy, staying socially engaged, because many of us will get dementia, but through some of these lifestyle changes and making sure you do things like treat diabetes and hypertension, you can lower your risk or at very least sort of help dementia come at a later age.
And then can you do that with medication? I mean, a lot of people take high blood pressure medication, diabetes medication. So do you see that this being altogether a greater solution rather than just one thing?
Oh, absolutely right. It's really going to be multifactorial, looking at sort of all the risk factors. And we think that middle age in particular is important for sort of setting up the risk factors for dementia. So especially for anyone who's listening, who's in their 40s and 50s, it's an especially important time to make sure any high blood pressure is treated, diabetes is treated, et cetera.
Do you feel like people in general are taking care of their health or are aware of their blood pressure and their weight and other vital that we need to know to make sure that we are protected?
Yeah, I have to say with the patients I see, I find that people are very engaged and that there's sort of increasing recognition that these things like high blood pressure that we can't feel still have real impacts on health.
Mm-hmm. 651-461-9226, that is the number to call if you would like to reach out. We're talking about dementia and a study and then what you can do to do your very best to prevent or, I guess, avoid getting it altogether if you can. We're talking to Dr. Carrie Sheets. She is a Hennepin Healthcare doctor, an expert in dementia, does a lot of research at Hennepin Healthcare. So what do we know about dementia? Do you believe it's always been with us, but we've just never named it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do. You know, I think that we're seeing more of it because we're all living longer. So it's, 100 years ago, people didn't live until their 80s and 90s that frequently. And now that that's something that a lot of us will get to do, we're living long enough to see these brain changes that lead to dementia.
Yeah, right. And someone said this is dementia. And now we have such technology, you can take a MRI and a scan of the brain and actually see what's happening, right, to actually signify what is and what isn't happening in your brain.
Oh, yeah, the imaging has really advanced. Yeah, we can get the MRIs and look at the portions of the brain that control memory, especially the hippocampus, and sometimes we can see that that is smaller than we might expect. Mm-hmm. There's also PET scans, or we can look for proteins like amyloid and tau, which we think cause Alzheimer's disease, and we can start to see some of those protein on these imaging pictures, which has really been a great advancement in the field.
How do you know what the difference is between natural aging and dementia?
Well, that's a great question. We know that as we get older, processing speed slows down a little bit, so it might take a little bit longer to think through problems. Multitasking often gets a little bit harder, so you might have to focus more on one task at a time. If someone notices, if you're having trouble finding words, for example, regularly, that's a sign that means maybe you should go talk to your primary care doctor. So it's things like frequent memory lapses that interfere with function are where we start to worry. All of us have occasional memory lapses.
Right. I mean, I would tell you that I have sentences that I'll be speaking and just absolutely lose what I was going to say. And I'm completely dumbfounded that I can't think of what I was just going to say. And it's like, do I need to get checked? I mean, what's going on there?
Oh, absolutely. We all have those moments. It's when those moments happen frequently and regularly that it's probably time to go talk to your primary care provider.
All right. Again, you are listening to our Health Hour. We do it every Sunday, and you're always invited to be part of the show at 651-461-9226. Now, Doctor, do we have a cause as of yet as to what causes this medical condition to happen?
Yeah, so there are multiple different causes, we think, sort of in terms of what's happening in the brain. There's Alzheimer's disease, which we think is due to the accumulation of these sort of abnormal proteins in the brain called amyloid and tau. They misfold. and eventually cause damage in the brain. There's other causes like Lewy body dementia, which is related to Parkinson's disease, and the symptoms vary a little bit by the type of dementia, but they all sort of ultimately lead to changes in memory and thinking that affect function and so make it harder to do things like manage your own medications or manage your own finances.
And if you're with someone, maybe it's a parent or another loved one, and they're showing indications that look like it might need attention, like that seems like a tricky spot to be in when you have to say, you know what, mom or whoever it is, I feel like this, that, and this is happening, and it's a little odd. And can you diagnose it, or do you know just enough of the signs before you say, oh, yes, in fact, this is dementia?
Yeah, you know, it is. It can be a really tricky thing to talk about with loved ones. Sometimes when a person's memory is changing, they're aware of it, and that can cause, what I hear from patients is that can be cause a lot of fear, because I think dementia is something that a lot of us are afraid of. Sometimes if your loved one is having memory changes, they may not be aware of it. You know, sometimes the memory changes and the brain doesn't notice that it's changing.
Mm.
So I just encourage families to approach with love and kindness and try to find sort of areas of common ground, because it can just be a really stressful topic for both families and their loved ones.
And again, we're talking to Hennepin Healthcare, Dr. Carrie Sheets. If you have a question or a comment, maybe you're going through something like this, 651-461-9226, Memories and the Brain. I've heard that as well, that someone who has dementia might do better remembering things from the 1930s than yesterday. Is that true? Is there a sort of a strange connection to old memories?
Absolutely. And actually, especially in Alzheimer's disease, we see that someone won't have any memory for recent events, but can give you specific details of something that happened 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what you say is, rather than if someone is speaking a falsehood, you don't say, no, that's wrong. You try to be gentle with them, or do you divert the conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question. Especially in moderate to more advanced dementia, where older adults aren't necessarily aware that their memory has changed, we recommend just joining them. So if they're talking like it's 40 years ago and maybe someone is alive, they think someone is alive who isn't alive, it's best to sort of join them. Often correcting someone with moderate to advanced dementia will make them distressed, and they're not going to remember the correction. So it's going to make them, it's going to be stressful for them without sort of changing their memory.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to join them where they are.
My mom always said that people were like 2-year-old, you just redirect. That was her. So talk about something else and get off the thing that might be holding you up and making things go haywire. Just talk about something
Absolutely.
Else. Yeah. Yeah. And she said toddlers do that too. If they're getting all cranky, just give them a different toy.
I feel like we all need some redirection from time to time.
Oh, are you kidding me? I could use some right now. I'm battling a cold. So, hey, we have a guy on the line, caller. Ross wants to jump into our conversation on Alzheimer's and dementia. Go ahead, Ross. You're on with our doctor today.
All right. Good morning. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. I'm sorry, the delay. I'll screw this up, I'm sure. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's 5 years ago, and I just recently took the 4-hour cognition test where they show you different numbers and colors, and you got a, you know, square peg in the round hole type test.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and said that, well, I have Lewy body dementia.
Hmm.
Do I tell people I have Lewy body dementia? Do I tell people I have Parkinson's? And I think of it as Lewy body being more advanced than the Parkinson's. Am I right in my thinking there?
That's a great question, Ross. And the 4-hour test you went through, the neuropsychology testing, does provide really detailed information about memory and thinking. I tend to think of Lewy body dementia and Parkinson's disease as being on the same spectrum of diseases, where Parkinson's, we see some of those motor symptoms first, so the tremor and the trouble moving. And Lewy body disease, we see the memory and thinking changes first. So I think, Ross, that you can probably tell people either, you know, depending on your preference. I'm not sure one is more right than the other. There's often changes in memory and thinking with Parkinson's disease. So if you just want to say Parkinson's disease, you can kind of feel rest assured that we can see memory and thinking problems as part of that.
Right. Those two are connected. It's so hard. I mean, when you hear that, I'm sad for Ross, but I know there's a lot of medicine. I have a friend who was diagnosed recently with Parkinson's. It feels like a bummer. You know, I'm not saying a death sentence. I'm just saying that it's like a blow when you get that kind of news. Would you say?
Oh, it can be. And I, Ross, I don't know to what extent it's sort of affecting what you do on a daily basis, but I appreciate you sharing with us because I know it can be hard for some folks to talk about.
Yeah, no kidding. Texture writes, is the Mediterranean diet good for dementia prevention?
It is. We think it is. It's one of the diets where there's evidence that following it is good for the brain, good for the heart, and will help you stay healthy as you get older.
All right, we're going to take a little break here, if you don't mind. And then when we come back, we'll have more calls and texts from folks, a lot of people with questions about this, obviously, as it affects a lot of people. And as you and I spoke earlier, we talked about the holidays and this being a time maybe you see someone you haven't seen in a while and notice something different, maybe some advice and suggestions for what you may or may not do. Dr. Carrie Sheets, Hennepin Healthcare with us on News Talk 830 WCC. And we are back with the final segment of our Health Hour. I'm Susie Jones, slightly under the weather. Hopefully you're doing all right out there. Dr. Carrie Sheets is our guest. She's Hennepin Healthcare expert in dementia and Alzheimer's, does research, is working on a research project now that she needs people to be a part of, and we'll find out more about that before we let her go. But we do want your input as well at 651-461-9226. A texter writes, Dr. Sheets, is there a Minnesota study about families with Alzheimer's? I have three older siblings, and I'm concerned that I might be next.
Well, that is a great question. I would encourage you at the very least to let your primary care provider know about that because you might want to see a neurologist or a geriatrician to talk a little bit more about your risk. The University of Minnesota Center for Healthy Aging does a lot of work with caregivers. So if you're interested in a caregiver study, I would check out some of the work that they're doing. I'm not aware of any specific studies in Minnesota looking at that familial risk right now, but I would keep your eye open because it's a constantly changing field, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have studies in the near future.
Yeah, yeah. Another texter writes, this is so sad. My husband was diagnosed with LATE. Do you know what that is, 2 years ago?
Oh, late dementia. Yes, it's a kind of a newly described type of dementia.
She says, I feel like I'm living with a stranger and trying to adjust. Does the doctor have any suggestions for the caregiver? I went to a support group, but all the stories were even more depressing, I can imagine. Any advice to her?
First of all, I'm just so sorry to hear that. We hear this a lot from caregivers that it's just so hard to have someone that you love change and to, like you said, feel like you're living with someone different. Mm-hmm. I would encourage you to, there's a whole variety of caregiver support groups, and sometimes it can take a while to find one that's a good fit. Mm-hmm. So if that first one didn't feel like a good fit, I would look around, see if there's others. The Alzheimer's Association can be a good resource for support groups. The other thing I would say is if you can, try to find time for yourself. It can be so hard when you're caring for a loved one to make that time, but it's really important and what can help make sure that you stay healthy through all of the stress.
And it's hard, I think, to ask for help. I remember when my dad was dying, my mom did not ask us for help. And finally, when the nurse came to the house, she said, Kay, where are your daughters? So, you get that call up for duty and, okay, I better jump up here and get going.
It's a great point. Yeah. And so often family and friends are ready and happy to help.
Yeah.
And as you said, it can be hard to make that initial ask. So I would say I like to reassure families that often you will find people are ready and happy to help.
Very good. Texter writes, can statin drugs increase dementia?
That is a good question. We think most of the data suggests that statins reduce the risk because they lower the levels of bad cholesterol. They lower the levels of LDL. Mm-hmm. And we know that high LDL is a risk factor for dementia. So I would say generally we think they lower the risk, not raise it.
So a high bad cholesterol number is a factor that is in play in determining whether or not someone has dementia or Alzheimer's or going to get it?
Yeah, it's one of those modifiable risk factors. So it's, like we talked about earlier, there's so many factors that contribute to the risk for dementia. So it's one of those factors. And it is, it's one of the factors we talked earlier about this big article on evidence-based strategies for preventing dementia, and lowering LDL is one of those.
Well, it sure is something else, isn't it? And we have about a minute left, a little over, but, you know, as I said, we're going into these holidays, parties and gatherings. What would you tell someone if you think that their person, or how might that look, and what would you say to do to offer some advice during the season, this time of year?
Oh, yeah. It's a common situation that you haven't seen a loved one in a half a year, and you see them and they look different and you start to worry about their memory. I always encourage families to start by talking to the person. You know, if they may be aware of the memory changes, they may not, but a good place to start is talking with them. You can ask them if they're starting to have trouble managing things around the house. So do they have ways to get food into grocery shop? Are they able to manage their own medications? Mm-hmm. And then if they're willing, you can start to help them find additional supports. So whether it's family or friends who can help, or formal supports through, you know, through the healthcare system. Sometimes you loved ones can be resistant to getting help. And so finding a common goal can be helpful. You know, maybe they want to get to their weekly religious service. And so starting where you have common areas.
Give us that number for the study one more time.
It's the HAP study, and the number is 612-283-6746.
Wonderful. Have a great week.
You as well. Thanks, Susie.
See y'all.